Like, he's just escaped. He's just never been caught.
Yeah, he's too good. He can't get got, you know?
Can't get got.
Can't get got. Can't get got if you're the best.
Yeah, that's true. Welcome back to the Booked on Fantasy podcast. We are two best friends who love all things fantasy. On this podcast, we will explore the world of fantasy through books, shows, and movies, but with a heavy emphasis on books. Today, we are so thrilled to continue on with Sarah J. Maas's Throne of Glass series. And let me tell you, it's getting juicy now, for sure. If it wasn't getting juicy before, it is now.
Definitely.
So as a quick reminder, we will be discussing chapters 15 through 22 specifically, but it is likely that previous chapters will come up as well. So if you have not read them or finished reading them and you don't want any spoilers, please make sure that you pause here. Go catch up on your reading and we'll be right here waiting for you when you're ready. Furthermore, we would like to give everyone a fair warning that this is an adult podcast where we will have explicit conversations. Explicit language may be used, so please be mindful of that and maybe put some headphones on first. All right, so really quick before we get into the thick of it with our summaries and analysis, we just have a couple quick housekeeping updates. First of all, if you have not checked them out yet, we do have our very first House of the Dragon episode out now. So that one is covering season one, episode one. And then today, when this episode releases, we will have House of the Dragons season one, episode two out as well. So you can have two wonderful episodes to go ahead and binge and refresh your memories on House of the Dragon. Hopefully we did a good job with that.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. We don't know for sure until you tell us, but here we are. And then obviously those are going to cover episode recaps. And then we also are including something new in those episodes where we're deeming it the Fantasy Court of Law trials, because with the Team Green versus the Team Black setup, we thought it'd be fun for us to present it like a court case. So that is a fun little perspective to take, and you can join in the case live with us too. So
be a juror, help us.
Yes, this is true. Cast your votes, decide who has a stronger claim. So our second housekeeping update, our next Throne of Glass episode for the next week will cover chapters 23 through 30. By the way, we would be speeding through these books if we could. Addison and I literally had a conversation about this today where we're like, oh, I'd be on book four by now. And I was like, same, for sure. But obviously, for the sake of a podcast, we are not jumping ahead and we're taking our time. And oh my gosh, my last little update, this isn't even really about the podcast, but I just feel like I need to say it. So... this is my last thing and then we'll get started. So I have confirmation now that one of my theories is correct. Addison called me this morning, or actually no, I called her because she was having trouble logging in. And I was like, I kept getting the little Google notifications like someone's trying to sign in with their MacBook from a different device. And I texted them to you twice and you were not getting the message. And I kept getting these notifications and I was like, I just need to call her. So I called her and I was like, hey, by the way, these codes are coming in and you're like, oh my gosh.
But anyway. I know. I'm sorry. I was out of the way to take my kids to school and I was trying to get logged in and I just wasn't paying attention. It was very, very not good for me. I was struggling a lot.
It's so funny. This was just, we were just laughing because this is like your second semi-boomer moment of
Don't tell them that. Don't tell them.
Okay, so I still love you, obviously. Okay, I'm not here to judge you. It's just been funny. But anyways, so we're chit-chatting on the phone as we do, right? And she is our designated chapter picker. So Addison goes ahead and she'll read through the next sections and decide where our next stopping point is. And lo and behold, she told me, she's like, I didn't want you to be right. Didn't want it to be true, but you were right. And I was like, yes. I'm literally so excited because obviously we had a TikToker, someone leave a comment on our TikTok page being like, one of the theories that we've talked about was not correct.
It wasn't like, one of the theories. It was my theory. The one that I was like absolutely willing to die on a hill about. It was about Dorian. And she was like, keep reading. So I'm over.
Yeah, that's true. So
I'm over one right now.
So one of Addison's theories has not been correct, but one of mine has been. So I don't know yet. Obviously, I have not read ahead yet. So I don't know which one of my theories is confirmed, but we're going to find out together next week. So...
I'll never tell until next week.
I have my suspicions, but yeah, we'll just leave it at that. So anyways.
I will say it's not like directly explicitly stated and confirmed, but based on the information evidence provided, you're kind of like, yeah, that's correct what you said. Yes. I won't tell you which one, but as much as it kills me.
I have a suspicion.
I mean, I'm proud of you, but mostly just mad at myself.
Addison loves to be right, so she's like, dang it, I was not the first one to be right.
No, literally, I'm ultra competitive. I hate to be wrong, and I have a feeling these words are going to haunt me for a long time, because I think I'm going to be wrong about literally everything. Just, you know what, just wait till we get to Fourth Wing, because Fourth Wing, Iron Flame, I got all the theories, so just that'll be my time to shine.
That's true, so anyways, okay. Now that we've got our housekeeping out of the way and we've got our ducks in a row, without further ado, let's get started with our actual discussion today. So, to give y'all a quick outline of today's episode, first we'll be starting with chapter summaries to refresh our memories. Next, we will dive into a deeper analysis with key insights, observations, and questions from events in today's chapters. After the analysis, we do have a fun little champions bracket update to add. So if you're watching on YouTube, you'll get a little visual of that we're going to display and show. Then last but not least, we're just going to round it out by sharing each of our favorite quotes or moments. So with that being said, Addison, please take it away with our chapter summaries.
Happily, Lorraine. Even though you were right, I was wrong.
It's okay. There's so many more opportunities. We're literally on book one of like,
I know,
so many. So,
but for every opportunity there is for me to be right, there's also an opportunity for me to be wrong.
So... That's true.
All right. Chapter 15. It's the day of the first test, and despite having no idea what to expect, our girl Selena is calm, cool, and collected. Neither Kale or Dorian offer her even the teeny tiniest hint of what's to come, but thankfully, the no-nonsense Brolo gives us the scoop. The first challenge is archery. The rules are simple. 5 targets, 5 arrows, 5 shots. Whoever has the worst aim goes home. Selena is delighted by this, knowing she could crush the competition, but Kale takes the wind out of her sails and reminds her not to show off. Most of the competitors do fine, but with a few standouts. Paylor, the youngest assassin, does notably bad, while Nox, Grave, and Kane do exceptionally well, much to Selena's annoyance. Selena's aim is true and she performs well in the competition and even strikes the true bullseye on the farthest target despite Kale's advice. Ultimately, Paylor is spared and one of the army soldiers is eliminated. Chapter 16. Selena and Kale are out for their early morning run while Selena is yet again vomiting her guts out. Kale notices the distinct scars in Selena's back. Kale asks her about them and we get a little backstory on Selena's early days in the mine. On Selena's first day in the mine, she was taken to the center of the camp and given 21 lashes. She is saved from infection by a young nameless woman who slipped her a tin of salve. Sadly, the very same day the young woman was raped and killed by her overseers in the mines. Selena tells Kale she never got to thank the woman in person, but she repaid her debt by paying those guards a visit and avenging her death on the day she snapped and almost made it to the wall. The following afternoon in the training room, as the champions are waiting for instructions, one of the discharged soldiers makes an escape attempt. He is swiftly killed with an arrow by one of the guards. Selena seems bothered by his choice and realizes that in some small way, this was his attempt to take a little bit of his humanity back instead of playing the king's game. Chapter 17. Despite hating it, Dorian attends court at his mother's request. Queen Georgina uses this time to pester Dorian about marriage. To be specific, why hasn't he picked a bride, and even gives him a list of acceptable and eligible young ladies he should consider for marriage. In a moment of existential anxiety, Dorian dwells on the fact that he is bored, so painfully bored. Bored of the court, bored of the women at court, really bored of everything, and that he feels that he has never quite fit in. In an effort to get far, far away from court, Dorian walks idly through the castle and stumbles upon Selena sparring with Princess Nehemia as a spectator. Dorian can't help but notice how graceful and lovely our girl is, but still manages to reprimand her for being with Nehemia without Kael around to monitor. Despite the reprimand, Dorian can't help but think about how beautiful Selena is and do some light flirting with her. Although Dorian insists that Nehemia cannot be allowed to spar with Selena, instead tells Nehemia that Dorian would like to be the first to spar with her. LOL. Chapter 18. While Selena is watching Dorian and Nehemia spar, an angry Kael confronts Selena. Kael demands to know what on earth she thinks she's doing with not only the Princess of Eelway, but also the Crown Prince of Adarlan, and on top of that, they're sparring. In an angry exchange of words, Selena reveals some vulnerability. She is genuinely afraid of having to go back to Endovir and will do everything in her power to make sure she doesn't have to return, including but not limited to putting in as many extra hours as possible into training. Kael seems unmoved by her small show of vulnerability and even goes so far as to insult her. Selena ends the conversation by telling Kael that she hates everything about her situation, but most of all, she hates him. Chapter 19. In this chapter, we get a new perspective. Lady Caltaine Rompier. We learn that she has one goal and one goal only, to win Prince Dorian and become his wife. She's using Duke parenting as a stepping stone into the Queen's court and to Prince Dorian's heart, or at least his hand in marriage. Meanwhile, Kael also yet again attempts to convince Dorian that Selena is dangerous and he needs to stay away from her. But he won't, because she thinks she's so cute. He can't help it.
So excited to talk about
it. I know.
This.
I'm like, romance, romance. Just I love waiting. Romance. I know. All right. Chapter 20. Selena is conflicted about her argument with Kael from earlier in the day and the recently deceased champion. To ease her mind, she decides to play the piano. Initially, Dorian comes to taunt Selena, but instead is mesmerized by her playing. In a verbal sparring match that is equal parts playful, flirtatious, and a little bit mean, we learn that Selena is lonely and that tragedy befell Sam shortly before her capture. Chapter 21. We are immediately catapulted into the next trial. The test is simple. Climb the castle wall and retrieve the flag. The first person to retrieve the flag and bring it back down wins. During the competition, Ned Clement, also known as Scythe, falls to his death. Grave attempts to sabotage Nox by pushing him down and then attempts to cut his rope. For reasons she can't explain, Selena decides to make a rescue attempt. Chapter 22. Selena's daring attempt to save Nox is a success, but the excitement isn't over yet. They are both still in the middle of the test. Much to her annoyance, Selena places 18th. Both she and Nox are saved from elimination. Kael and Selena make up, well, mostly, and it is revealed that yet another champion was found dead and dismembered, but the killer and motives still remain a mystery.
Not though, because we know what it is. It's a demon creature.
Okay,
I think I'm 90%
yet to be confirmed. Just to be clear, that has yet to be confirmed. We do not know who or what is happening. So, just
I'm 90% sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So chapter 15 is all about the first test, which we know is the archery test. They get 5 shots, 5 arrows, 5 targets. Each one gets consecutively farther away. There's like different colored rings. And then like the truest dark center is like a little black circle. Naturally, Selena is like, of course she can hit all of them, but she has to tone it down so she doesn't alarm anyone. So Kane does fine. He hits almost all of them, but none of the little black dots. Okay, so I thought about this when I was reading it, because I remember you pointed out last time that it's like a throwaway line, but it says his black ring glinting. And remember you pointed out about his ring last time that it was black, like maybe it's made from the same magical material of the clock tower. So I did just jot that down because, oh, they're mentioning the ring again. So maybe further evidence to support your magical ring theory. I don't know. Yeah. Also, there's Grave. He did fine. He got 4 bullseyes. I think it's just notable that Grave is probably going to be a contender. I think maybe it's possible that he's going to end up in the final duel. I kind of thought that each trial would be like a little more prominent. Like it would be a little more, I guess, dramatic or something. Like more attention would be given to it. But it kind of seems like they're just kind of rapid succession in passing. So I'm already kind of thinking about who's going to be the final four, like who's going to make it to the face-offs. So right now I'm kind of thinking Kane, obviously Selena, maybe Grave, and possibly Nox, because obviously he's becoming a more prominent character. And then more notably, Nox does really well in these chapters. He gets 3 bullseyes and then 2 of the longer shots he gets in the inner ring. And this is the first time we see Selena consider that maybe he should be an ally. Thus far, she's kind of been in this mode of like, I don't need anyone. I'm not here to make friends. But I think we've started to see her and Nox's relationship slowly develop. And I think that also kind of speaks to that, which we'll talk about later. Selena is lonely and she needs people. You know, she misses having some kind of support system. She's been isolated for so long. And so this is kind of the first little insight into her head where we see that she is considering maybe having Nox as an ally, which I'm pro Nox. I like Nox a lot. I don't know why, I just get good vibes from him. What do you think?
I do too. I had pretty much the exact same notes about that statement. It's like just her taking particular interest in befriending him is notable because obviously Selena is highly skilled herself. So if she's taking some interest in someone, it means that something about them is probably more standout than usual. And then, yes, I agree with the fact that she's very like lonely. I mean, she was already kind of drawn to Nox previously a little bit when they're in the training rooms and she decided to help him with the knife throwing skills back in previous chapters. And I could already see, okay, she didn't fully trust him yet, but she was starting to kind of take note of him and let down her guard a little bit with some of them. And really, he's the only one she's, of the other competitors at least, Nox is the only person that she's done that with so far. So I do think that that's notable, and I'm curious to see where the relationship goes as we progress in the book.
I was also wondering, too, if maybe it's going to be set up, because we know in the later chapter that Selena saves Nox's ass in one of the challenges, which we'll talk about later. But I also wonder if it sort of sets up, like, he kind of sacrifices himself for her, maybe not like in death, but in a test or something, he goes out of his way to help her, take care of her. Or we do know there's a murderer running around, a murderer or a murderous thing.
Creature.
Okay. A creature. And so maybe Nox even rescues her, helps her. I don't know. I do think it may be set up for something where Nox kind of saves or helps her. Like their allyship is more than just throughout the trial. So I don't know. I'm pro Nox.
Well, that's... it's interesting you say that because that's making me think of, remember, they had a conversation and Nox said that his sponsor has guaranteed him immunity. He's not going to go back to prison, assuming he doesn't die in these trials, essentially. Like, he's free to go after this. And so even if it's not something specifically within these tournaments, I could definitely see, assuming if they both survive, I could see them having a friendship further down the line, too.
Yes, that is so funny you say that because I actually had that in my notes because I think it's interesting that it specifically in the book points out, he's like, oh, my sponsor granted me immunity. So even if I don't win, I'm good. And I'm like, oh, he's going to be free. So maybe later in another book, if Selena's out on a mission or she's escape or something, like Nox helps her or, you know, I don't know. So that's funny because I have that in my notes too, that I think,
yes.
Assuming Nox does not die, that we'll maybe see him again. And which is good, because I like them. I kind of like their rapport.
The other thing you had pointed out about how you just felt like these tests were kind of rudimentary, I guess.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way, but I don't know. Like, to me, I'm almost wondering if all of these skills are combining into something specific. I'm thinking further down the line, because why does this king need a champion specifically, right? Like, he needs somebody for a very specific purpose. So I wonder if all of these training tests and these battles are designed to find someone who can complete whatever it is that this champion is needed for.
Oh,
and again, I don't know what that is yet, but
right.
The ability to shoot things from afar. Also, realistically, these are all kind of assassin skills anyway.
Yeah.
More or less, like shooting people from afar, scaling walls and hiding out in places, running far away. Just, I mean, all of these in general are general skills that I think would be necessary for an assassin or anybody. I'm just curious to see what is this champion, whoever wins this tournament, what are they ultimately going to do for the king?
That's true, because ultimately the king could have just picked who he thought was most capable, whether that be Selena or Kane. So why go through all the stress and risk of having, you know, you have 24 killers basically in place. So why go through that? Because it can't be just to entertain, you know, the lords and ladies. So that is a good question. Is it designed for a specific intent or purpose? So that will be interesting to see as we continue to read. So, yeah.
Yeah. I also suspect that these are just the preliminary ones. We're going to get more challenging tests later on for sure.
I would think so. Yeah. And then my last note about this chapter is just about Paler, the youngest assassin. He does a very mediocre job on the test. It even calls out that he's not even big enough to use a longbow, and Rollo and the others tease him. They're kind of mean. And you get kind of a little character insight to Selena. She can't help herself, and she does even feel a little bad for him. And she worries about what will happen to him if he'll be eliminated. Like, she worries as he, because she doesn't really know whether he came from a prison or another work camp or something. And I think it just highlights that she has a big heart and that she's going to continually be a champion for the weak, quote unquote. I mean, he's not really weak, but you know what I mean? Like, the underdog.
Mm-hmm. So my last point from chapter 15 was all of the comments and the thoughts Selena had about how everybody else was getting all the attention except for her. So one of her quotes was, all she could think about was Kane getting applauded by Parrington, Kane getting clapped on the back by Brulo, Kane getting all that praise and attention, not because he was a mountain of muscle, but because he actually deserved it. So,
boo.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, not a fan of Kane. But in this particular case, obviously, she's highly annoyed by that because she does not like Kane. She gets a bad feeling about him, obviously, as all of us do, too. But it's particularly bothersome that he's getting praised, but he actually also happens to be pretty good at it. So, he was good at the archery test, for sure.
He was.
But we also know that Selena's just very bothered by this. She really wants to be able to show off her skill and to prove that she deserves to be there, not to be this jewel thief girl that nobody takes seriously. She hates that, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's that comment at the end. She said, though she hadn't lost by any means, Selena couldn't stand, absolutely could not stand the feeling that she hadn't really won anything at all. So to her, I think this really plays into her mindset that was instilled by Arabin, because obviously Arabin was a very hard teacher, really cruel, just straight up cruel, like an abusive in all senses. But if she wasn't winning, then there was no praise from Arabin whatsoever. And we know that he took really extreme measures to get her to be to the level and the skill that she is. And so to her, winning and being the best is everything. Which is sad, I think, like, from a mental standpoint, because it is, like, such a big part of her identity. And without the ability to show that off, she feels really unrecognized, empty. I think. Yeah, and empty. And, like, just she doesn't really know what else she has other than to be an assassin that's feared.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, chapter 16. So we'll just dive right in.
Yeah.
In this chapter, Kale and Selena are going for a little run, and she's vomiting, and he sees her back. And he asks her about the scars on her back, which we remember from earlier chapters. She says she was whipped and they rubbed salt in her wounds, which is extra horrible. I was not happy with Kale's word choices. And of course, in the tone I'm reading it, he asks her, what did you do to deserve it? And she says, no one deserves to be whipped like an animal. And I was like, that's goddamn right. That's goddamn right, Selena. I was like, you tell him to mind his own fucking business, okay? Nobody deserves you. I was like really angry. I don't know why, but it really bothered me because Kale has always been a little brusque and kind of straightforward with her. But I feel like sometimes it's almost like he has no humanity when he talks to her. He kind of goes back and forth between treating her like a criminal and treating her like a human being. And I feel like in these chapters, specifically this one, he's treating her more like a criminal. And I'm like, excuse you. Not nice. I don't know. I didn't like it.
In these chapters, I could really tell that there's a lot of internal conflict for both Kale and Dorian about their first impressions of Selena, like knowing her background, knowing who she is, knowing how dangerous she actually can be, and having to reconcile that with the fact that now they are in a position to look out for her and be responsible for her safety. And through being around her so much, they actually have an opportunity to talk to her and get to know her. And they realize, wait a second, you're not just this crazy zero morals assassin. We learn that she definitely has boundaries. She has a lot of empathy for people in dire circumstances. And I think later on, we'll learn that there's likely a lot of conflict with her position as well as an assassin. I think you had mentioned this previously, that you felt like perhaps there was disagreement between her jobs as an assassin and her own morality, and that maybe that's what led to her betrayal, or, you know, whatever happened to her in the past. And I agree with that, because you just see so many instances of her with the comment about, like, no one deserved to be treated like that, her freeing the prisoners, her sympathizing with the rebels and the causes of people that are opposing Otterlin's conquests and everything. So I think you're really seeing this back and forth between the instinct of Kale to be like, no, you're an assassin. Obviously, you're a deadly person. You clearly did something bad. And then Celaena being like, no, actually, I didn't do anything. This was just straight up cruel. And I'm a human being that deserves empathy and compassion as much as anybody else. I'm not just this crazy, godless,
bloodthirsty
person. Yeah, bloodthirsty, yeah, cruel assassin. I have morals, standards. I deserve to be treated like a person.
Yeah, I agree totally. I think we'll see more of Celaena's character development too, where she is really trying to almost prove her humanity. Sometimes when I'm reading, I feel like I get these hints or just kind of notions that Celaena not necessarily regrets her past, but doesn't feel good about some of the things that she's done. She wants to be different in the future. I don't know. Maybe. I'm just reaching here. It's just a sense that I get, I guess, when I read about her character.
Well, you also know that she was subjected to a lot of cruel things. And when you're being subjected to something like that, what do? You shut off your emotions. You just kind of compartmentalize things to get through it, essentially. And I think now that she's removed from that role as an assassin, she spent this time in the prisons where she was, you know, subjected to really harsh punishment for no reason, and you can see her stepping back and I think probably simultaneously also starting to process emotions herself, I think. Mm-hmm. So
it's giving very Vampire Diaries, where they turn off their humanity because they don't want to think of all the bad things they're doing. And then yeah, when they turn it on, they feel all the feelings. That's what it's giving.
I know. I like Celaena. I know that she's this deadly character or whatever, but I think it's a front. I don't believe any of it. I think she has her reasons for doing these things. But on the opposite hand, I do appreciate that Kale, I think, switched. So as soon as she's like, no, nobody deserves that.
In the conversation, they're talking about the woman that helped her, they're giving her the salve, and then she was raped and killed. And then there's sort of this kind of implied conversation. He basically asked her, all right, were you sexually assaulted? And she says, no. And he says, but you were a woman in Indovi. That's me implying he knows the condition of the mind that women in Indovi are honestly probably pretty frequently sexually assaulted. So in that conversation with Kale, she actually has kind of a secondary thought that she wonders, did Erobin perhaps bribe the guards? She says her first reasoning is that after the day she snapped, they were all too afraid to get near her. But then she also kind of in her internal dialogue says she thinks it's possible that Erobin bribed them for her safety. So if that's true, Liz, a really big question. Why wouldn't Erobin just rescue her? Like, why go through all the hassle? Because that had to be, like, quite a coordinated effort to get all the guards' money, basically, like, hey, don't rape this prisoner. I don't know. I really want to know where the hell Erobin is, what he's doing, what the fuck happened. But that seems to indicate that from Celaena's perspective, the way they left things in their relationship, Erobin would still care about her. So if he cares about her, then why didn't he just come get her? Why didn't he just rescue her? I don't know. Where is Erobin Hamel and what is he doing? What is he doing?
Yes, I agree. Well, I think in a lot of these chapters that we read in this section, I realized that her memories and her further reflections about Erobin, I don't think he was the one that betrayed her. I don't know, because she talks about the betrayal and how it was really hard, but she also still is recalling to us as readers these memories of like, oh, well, maybe he must have done these things. I feel like if he was seriously being considered by her as her betrayer, then I don't know if she would continue to bring up thoughts like that. Like in this case of, was Erobin the one that bribed the guards and kept her safe? I don't know if she would have those thoughts if she truly believed that Erobin was the one that betrayed her, you know? But in general, so many questions about Arabin and their relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, who is this man? Like, so where has he been? I don't know. I guess we'll find out later, but...
Mm-hmm. So in chapter 17, we open with Dorian and he's at Queen Georgina's court and basically hates it. He hates every part of it. I'm not even sure he likes his mom very much. Maybe he loves her, but he doesn't like her very much.
Yeah,
she's very pushy. She wants him to get married. So he quickly makes an exit out of the court and he's just idly wandering through the halls and we get some insight into his thoughts. So one of the first things that really stood out to me was where he is thinking about Princess Nehemia and he's remarking that he still has been unable to figure out what his father's motivations were in letting her come to Rifthold and to the Glass Castle specifically. And he even kind of thinks out loud that she's really not the best choice to have at the castle because of her strongly rumored association with the rebels, right? What purpose would it serve for the king to allow her to be there? And so I had to ask myself, what are the king's motivations? What is he getting out of having Princess Nehemia there? And thus far, I really couldn't think of anything other than what has been discussed in the plot. And there's a part where Dorian is like thinking about a meeting he had with the council. I think he's even talking to Kale about it, but he's talking about Duke Parrington's plan that he presented to the council to basically hold Nehemia hostage while they invade Ilway.
So I guess from that perspective, Nehemia is supposed to be the front person behind the rebellion then, right? Is that kind of like how we're interpreting, like she's kind of leading that front and that's why it would be so important to keep her away from Ilway?
So my impression is that Ilway is sort of the last holdout from the King of Otterland's conquest, right? And that the kingdom of Ilway sort of balances rather precariously on this tightrope of, we're not trouble. Don't look over us. Don't look over here. You know, we're doing nothing. We're just existing. We will bow to you. But in reality, it is rumored and probably true that it's the last stronghold for rebels and that Nehemia specifically funnels them weapons, information, etc. And so I guess on the one hand, it's not a good look for her to be in the castle, but then maybe it's like a keep your friends close but your enemies closer. The king has her there to keep an eye under her under the guise of like, oh, she's going to learn our customs and stuff. So it did make me wonder.
Yes. So I think the point about kind of keeping enemies closer, the idea being that they'll just keep Nehemia preoccupied and unavailable to the rebels. If she is the main person who supplies weapons, information, and just kind of coordinates with the rebels more or less, then without her being there, they're basically flying blind. And so then that provides Otterlin the opportunity to obviously come in and dismantle the rebel forces before they gain any further traction or get them while they're weak, while they're kind of struggling to figure out what's going on. But the problem with that, though, is two things. So if that's true, then Nehemia being in the castle seems more dangerous to them because now she's observing everything about Otterlin. She can see everything in the entire operations of how they go. And yes, she may not have access. Like, obviously, they restrict where she can be, who she can be around, what she can do in the castle. But she's smart. Like, she's got to be in there, and she has to be able to figure out something. So I just can't imagine that it would make a ton of sense to keep her knowing her associations or strongly speculating what her associations are. Why would you keep her right inside the territory where they make a lot of these, like, court decisions and stuff?
And
like,
give her access.
A little bit. Yeah. But also, simultaneously, that would explain why Kael and Dorian are so like, when Selena's talking with her, when they catch her sparring and practicing with her, they're like, what are you doing? She cannot be doing any of that. I don't know. It just, to me, this doesn't seem, it doesn't seem smart to me to keep her in there, like in the court with them.
I don't know. I really could go either way, honestly. I'm very like, on the one hand, this, but on the other, I'm like, ooh, that also kind of makes sense. So I don't know. It's just something to keep an eye out for as we continue to read. So we also have to talk about Dorian's character development in this chapter. Not a lot of plot-driven sort of anything happening, but a lot of development, which I think is nice because, I don't know, I want to fall in love with the characters. I'm still chasing the Zayden Ryerson high. I want to be in love with somebody.
Okay. We need our latest shadow daddies to appear. Exactly. We have none yet.
None. And Kale has already disappointed me in these set of chapters. So it's all on you, Dorian. It's all on you. So we get a little insight. We know that he's a ladies' man, as Philippa has reminded us that he has a very big heart. You know,
quote unquote, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
But I think he feels this sort of existential boredom, right? He's just bored of his existence. He's tired of the same old politics, the same old ladies at the court, the same old games that everyone plays. And I actually have a specific quote I highlighted for this because I thought it was very insightful. But he says, many were his age, but he somehow felt as if there existed a vast distance between them. He didn't feel older, nor did he feel any wiser, but rather he felt as if there was something inside him that didn't fit with their merriment, with their willing ignorance of the world outside the castle. It went beyond his title. He had enjoyed their company early in his adolescence, but it had become apparent that he'd always be a step away. The worst of it was that they didn't seem to notice he was different or that he felt different. Okay, so I wrote a lot of notes about this because I was like, what does this mean? What does this mean? So here's kind of like, a theory is a strong word. I don't think I want to like slap theory on it because now I'm cautious because I was already rushing and I'm embarrassed. So we're going to call it like a light thought, okay?
Speculation.
A speculation. Thank you. That's the perfect word. I think he feels different. This is going to sound kind of stupid when I say it. I think he feels different because he is different. I don't know what. Maybe he has magic and he doesn't know it. He's not aware of it. It's been repressed. Maybe he's part fae. I do wonder because remember we talked about the striking sapphire blue eyes, yes, which I thought meant that his mama and his daddy weren't, or mama and his daddy, which I was clearly wrong about. I'll just say that I was wrong. But obviously this speculation is in its infancy, but I feel like there's something there. There's something to that otherness that he feels.
Yes, I could definitely see that. I remember the quote about his eyes, and I do still remember that and take note of it. It's backlogged in here somewhere. I haven't found enough information about him yet, but I could definitely see something with him. I do think, if nothing else, we see that Dorian is actually very compassionate. He's bored with the court, but he wanted to participate in the council. He wants to be involved with what's going on a larger scale. We know that his interactions with Selena and his thoughts about what he sees. And we see that he is intrigued by her because she is so different than what he's used to. And I think that it speaks to, like, yes, there's the physical attraction too, but I do think he has a lot of fascination with her because she's lived such a different life, like such an exciting, total opposite of what he's been confined to, right? Like, he doesn't want to be in this court, making these silly little court appearances, having to have these weird engagements with other lords and ladies, participating in just a silly frivolity of being a part of the royal court. But he's not really participating in a meaningful manner either himself. He even says that he felt like an ornament. So yes, he doesn't truly feel like he is participating in a meaningful manner. He's just there because he has to be, and he's kind of forced to play the part. But again, it's all very superficial things. It's nothing that really matters and is very important.
I think superficial is a good word. He's tired of living a superficial existence. And when he even says they don't think of the world outside of the court, he thinks about, I think, more than just his immediate surroundings. Okay, so after he leaves Queen Georgina's court, he's walking down the hall and he stumbles across the training room and he sees that Selena is sparring with guards and he also sees that Nahimi is there. And immediately he's very alarmed. He's very triggered by this. And I just thought this was notable because to me, although I desperately want them to at bare minimum be friends, be in love, really is what I really want. He does not trust Selena. He gets very angry and he's basically like, what are you doing? Surely you understand why we cannot allow this. And honestly, I didn't like that. I was like, you need to trust Selena. And even when Selena's like, why would I kill one of the only people in this castle who's not a babbling idiot? And I said, like, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it to me, fair shows, point. Like, to me, it shows it's a strong signal that he is still not to the point where he fully trusts her yet. The fact that it gives him pause. So they're not in love yet, sadly.
Well, I don't remember if it was exactly in this chapter that she said it, but she's like, we didn't even have a conversation. He makes a comment where he's like, I don't recall you being so talkative. And she's like, well, perhaps if you'd taken the time to speak with me, you'd have found me to be so. And then he says, and when would I have spoken to you? And she says, you do recall the little fact that we traveled together from Endovir, don't you? And that I've been here for weeks now. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I sent you those books. And she's like, we've barely had any conversations, which is true. Anything we've learned about how Dorian feels about Celaena has literally just been his inner monologue and his thoughts. True. And we're sitting here being like, oh, so fun. But at the end of the day, they really haven't gotten to know each other. I think she has a closer relationship with Kael right now because they've actually had conversations about her past or their interests. And they spend a lot more time together. And from Dorian's perspective, we start to see him becoming more physically attracted to her. But that's basically at its core all it is, right? Which is still exciting. I was like, oh my gosh, I want this to develop. But it's still just physical attraction at its core. As annoying as it is. I think that's why.
I just like all the parts. I know. I just like all the parts where he's thinking about how beautiful she is. And I love all the innuendos where the lady says, apparently a woman can only go so long without a sword between her hands. And she like winks. And then when she says, would you rather spar with me? And he said, perhaps we have a private lesson in your chambers tonight. And Celaena says, I'll be waiting. And I was like, but obviously, you know, that's just a little bit of
it's hopeful. Sparring. It's just like, yeah, it's just hopeful for us. I too agree that I'm so desperate. I mean, it is really cute to see him admiring her because he'll be like, there she was. Her golden hair shone as she wove in and out of the knot of the three guards.
Dude.
Yes, she was truly lovely. And just him taking note of her embarrassment when he catches her and things and stuff too. And on both of their parts, we see both of them kind of getting a little red and flustered from like
blushing. I know.
Yeah. True. So,
maybe. I'm going to remain hopeful.
I am too. I really want something to happen. But yeah. Again, at the end of the day, currently as it stands, Dorian's attraction to Celaena is purely physical.
I agree with what you're saying. I just don't like it.
So I know I don't like it either.
I'm going to ignore it. It's correct, but I don't like it. In this next chapter, chapter 18, this is where Kael and Celaena have their big fight. Once again, this chapter frustrated me because I don't know. Is it wrong if I wanted to be with both of them? I don't know. I just wanted to be with somebody, but I personally, like, I really.
There's a triangle.
Love triangle.
Triangle.
Yeah. We'll see. I don't know. But at bare minimum, it made me dislike Kael, and I don't like that because I have a crush on Kael, and I want to like Kael, and I want him to be nice to Celaena specifically. So this is where they had their kind of big blowout. And during this conversation, I feel that Celaena really reveals some vulnerability. Her vulnerability comes out in the form of anger. And she says that, why do you think I'm running every morning? It's because my body is a wreck and I have to win. I'm desperate to win this tournament because I can't go back to Endovir. I won't make it. And so she's willing to do literally anything, including in putting in extra hours. I think deep down, she's genuinely afraid that she could lose and end back in Endovir. And I don't think she thinks she would survive physically, but also mentally, like her soul, her mental stability, like she's not going to make it. So then Kael's reaction, it's a bad look for him. I mean, just flat out, honestly, he's unkind. He snaps back. So I was like, okay, when I'm writing my notes, I was like, how can I defend Kael? What can I do to get him out of this? I will say, just like a little aside, it seems a bit out of character for him. He's not always the most friendly, but he's usually not mean or cruel or purposefully unkind. And so I thought maybe he's just very stressed about the murders going on. And like, that's putting a lot of stress on him because the king is away and he's sort of the overseer of the challenge. So if things go wrong, it's his head on a platter, so to speak. It's his personal responsibility to ensure the tournament runs smoothly. And then secondly, this is what I'm really hoping. This is how I justified my mind. Maybe it's a defense mechanism because he feels like he's getting too close for her. So he knows that he shouldn't fall for her. So he's like, I'll be mean to her. So I don't. But he can't help it because he loves her. He loves her. Okay, maybe not love, but but you know what I mean.
She's right in there. It's love right now.
I am in girl world. Okay. I'm planning their wedding. I'm planning their kids. Okay. I'm in girl world. That's what, just let me be.
Yes. But, oh my gosh. But no, truly, I totally agree.
Yeah. I really agree that feel that it's a defense mechanism.
You've noticed every time that Kale is mean to her, it's when they're in a public setting. When they're in private. When they're in private, when nobody else is around them, particularly with Dorian. And every time it's the three of them and Kale notices Dorian flirting back with Selena, he directs it as if he's trying to pretend that he's protecting Dorian because he'll be like, she's dangerous. Remember that she's dangerous. That's kind of what I notice is every time they're in a publicly visible setting, he's much more cautious about how much he shows about their actual relationship. And then behind closed doors, then I think he feels like he can kind of let his guard down. And that's when he gets to know Selena. And that is also simultaneously what is really frustrating to Selena. She's so frustrated because she really wants friendship and she really wants to be seen, number one, as a capable assassin, which we already know she's not allowed to do because she's been instructed, you cannot be that way. You cannot be this thing that you instinctively have been trained to be since like...
literally eight, yes.
8 years old. You can't do that. So that's... problem number one. And then problem number two is she's had so much loss in her life. She gets to have these interactions with characters. She's having these kind of intimate conversations with Kale. And then all of a sudden, he'll just turn around and snap at her. She's just really surprised by that, you know. And so then she lashes out too because she's like, wait a second, we're kind of friends, but why are you yelling at me? Why are you being this way towards me all of a sudden now?
I think the lines are just blurred in the relationship. He's confused. She's confused. Are we friends? Do we like each other? Are we just allies? Like, what is the extent of our relationship?
Right, right. You know, she has mentioned on occasion that Kale is handsome, but she hasn't necessarily been like, oh, he's like really attractive in the way that she's mentally shared about Dorian.
Yeah, so, you're right.
You know, she'll be like, it made her uneasy how he made her blush. In fact, he was so attractive that she had difficulty not thinking about how attractive he was. And again, wondered why he wasn't married. I feel like this is a stronger indication that Selena is mutually physically attracted to Dorian. Mm-hmm. But again, is also unsure of how to proceed, given her circumstances and her position as his champion competitor.
Yeah. Sounds like they need to spend more time together. That's what I think.
I think so, too. And they will.
I hope so.
Moving on.
Oh, yeah. That was a beautiful segue into the next chapter. Well, the next few chapters. So for chapter 19, we get a little bit of a perspective shift to Lady Caltaine. We've met her in the story, but we have not actually had any chapters from her perspective. So it's relatively short, but I shouldn't say that I love her character, but it made me feel that her character has more depth and it's going to have deeper levels than just what we're originally led to believe. I think we're originally led to believe that she's just kind of a mean, gossipy court lady who wants to marry Dorian and is kind of jealous. But there's something about her internal thought process that we're exposed to that makes me feel that she is much, much more than a simpering, gossiping court lady, that she's actually very ambitious. She's very clever. And although, of course, her main goal right now is that she wants to marry Dorian, I feel like if her energies were directed into something more meaningful, that she could actually be a really great ally. She strikes me as a character that is a force to be reckoned with. And whatever she sets her mind to, get out of her way, because she's super clever and really able to manipulate and kind of maneuver people and situations to her advantage. And so it led me to a question of, do you think she's going to become a more prominent character in this book and in future chapters? And do you think that perhaps she may become an unexpected ally for Selena? What is her purpose in the story? What did you think about that, Lorraine?
I hadn't really thought of it that way, although, I mean, I definitely think that she's going to become more prominent in this book than she currently has been, because obviously Selena, to her, presents an obstacle. So she needs to do something with Selena and get her out of the way, because at this point in time, Lady Caltaine believes Selena is Lillian Gordana, who is just the prince's latest love interest. Selena is an obstacle in her pathway to her goal. And so throughout the rest of the book, I'm sure she's going to go investigating and she's going to go figure out, okay, what's really the situation with Selena? What's going on with her and Dorian's relationship? And how do I get rid of Selena so that I can get to Dorian and then get married? But I agree that she's clever. She has depth to her. So
I just have a feeling that we're going to get more of her and we're going to end up liking her in the end. Once her particular skill set gets maneuvered into the right thing, like helping, I don't know, with the word marks or I don't know, whatever it is.
Oh, you know, given how close she is to Parrington, she might figure out something about Kane. And obviously we know that Kane is
Parrington's
got alarm bells about Kane, and Kane is Parrington's champion, and she is currently using Parrington as her source of information.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very possible that maybe she's going to be the one to figure out what's going on in this freaking castle, because Parrington is involved with that.
Ooh, maybe. See? Don't sleep on Lady Caltaine. Don't sleep on her.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. We won't sleep on Lady Caltaine. I don't like what she's currently doing, but if her skill set shifts to a different goal, then I could get behind Lady Caltaine here. So
God, I'm so tempted just to stay up and finish the book.
The next episode, guys, scratch our plan. We're just going to read the rest of the book.
God, I need to know.
I need to know too. Oh my gosh, it's just a pit of curiosity that won't leave me alone. But
I know.
My mind's running now. Now that you brought that up, my gears are turning.
Okay, let's switch gears. So the other part of this chapter is the conversation between Kael and Dorian. And Kael basically, it's the same old, same old. You need to stay away from Selena. She's dangerous, blah, 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 blah. So my question here is, do we think that Kael is actually jealous or he's genuinely worried or both? What do you think?
I had this exact same thought, and this is where my little idea about like maybe their possible triangle comes from, because like before I said, in my opinion, Kael really only seems to be dismissive and put up this boundary about his relationship to Selena when he's in a public setting, and especially when he's around Dorian, right? And every time Dorian has ever tried to interact with Selena, Kael has always come in and questioned Dorian and been like, I can tell that, you know, you're getting attractive to her, but that's a dangerous game. Be careful. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. And so he's really trying to make sure that Dorian puts a stop to his attractions and does not pursue anything. But simultaneously, we see that he's really kind to her when they're having lunch together and when they're training, and as he like gets more information about her and they exchange information about each other, really, his demeanor is totally different. I think it's both. And I think it's because he feels conflicted about his role as a guard, but then also his, just given how much time he spent around Selena and realizing that she is not what he thought she was.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that I necessarily get attraction vibes from Kael. To me, it seems like they're becoming friends. They're getting to know each other, but I never really got too much a vibe from Selena or Kael, respectively, that either of them really think of the other one in this physically attracted way, in the same way that we hear the thoughts of like Dorian and Selena thinking about each other. So.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I think echoing a similar sentiment, I wrote that I think at this point he's mostly just worried. I get the impression that Kael acts as a buffer between the king and Dorian, because obviously the king and Dorian butt heads a lot, and that he does genuinely worry about Dorian because, you know, Dorian is kind of flippant and doesn't always think about the implications of what he says or does, especially in the context of how the king will react and respond. And so I do think for the most part he's trying to protect Dorian, because Dorian seems to be his own worst enemy, honestly. So I don't really think it's jealousy at this point. I really do think that he's just probably wants to protect him. And I do feel there is strong evidence to support that he is trying to protect Selena, because he's like, God, you haven't been visiting her room and I have you. Like, I think it bothers him, maybe a little bit of jealousy, but more because he wants to protect Selena's innocence. It is heavily implied that he doesn't like the idea of Dorian being intimate with her, that he still thinks that Selena, her innocence, needs to be protected. So Selena, in chapter 20, she is very torn up about her conflict with Kael. She's doesn't feel good about it. I think she's angry. Her feelings are hurt. And so she decides to play the pianoforte to ease her mind. Which, why did they call it the pianoforte? Why not just say the piano? I think it's a type of piano.
I think it's like a type of, maybe like a, I don't know. There's grand pianos and smaller pianos. I don't know.
But she plays.
It was not an electric keyboard. You know
that. No, that's for sure. But she begins to think about Arabin and how she used to play for Arabin, and she starts wondering about him. And so she's wondering to herself, does he know that she's out of Indovia? Would he try to rescue her? And then this is where she makes the comment that we kind of alluded to early in the episode, that she still didn't dare face the possibility of who might have betrayed her. And I want to emphasize that when you're reading the written copy of the book, who is italicized. And so I feel like that is an intentional emphasis. We've gotten enough hints throughout the chapters we've read this far that it is someone she knows who was a deep betrayal. And so prediction time, I'm not going to say theory, a heavy, very strong speculation that I do feel that it was Arabin who betrayed her. But why, may you ask? Addison has four reasons, okay? Four potential reasons. Number one, he was jealous of her success. She became Otterland's most notable assassin for hire. She was very successful, probably pretty wealthy because of it. So he was just flat out jealous of her success. He's like, you're my protege. You can't surpass me. So he's like, I'm going to get you caught.
Interesting.
Number two, he uses her as a pawn in a greater scheme. So Arabin obviously is older than her, okay? He has probably been around for a while. And so it may be like Arabin is sort of manipulating a lot of the events in the realm for a greater purpose, maybe for the rebels, maybe for his own personal gain. And so maybe getting Selena caught is a chess piece and the greater batch of life, so to speak. And that her capture somehow allowed a chain of events that perpetrated movement in another area of the continent. I don't know if that makes sense. So that's obviously a very broad guess because we don't know anything about Arabin or his motivations. The third is that it is some sort of test to see if she is worthy. Okay, like before he enlightens her with some more knowledge or gives her some more training, he needs to see, will she crack? Will she tell the whereabouts of Arabin and the Assassin's Guild? What information will she dispel? Will she survive? Because maybe it's if you can't survive in Dovia for a year, you're not worthy. You're not worthy of whatever the next thing is. Okay. And the last is, and this is sort of thing into one of your theories from an earlier episode, he knows that she is fated for something, right? He knows that she's special. Maybe he knows something about her magic or something about her person that even she has forgotten. And so putting her in that position sets her up for the future so that she can be where she needs to be when she needs to be. So those are my four reasons. I don't know. It could be all of them, none of them, combination. Could have nothing to do with Arabin.
I think those are really fair questions to ask about him because, I mean, he does get brought up a lot often by Selena. Yeah. Like, and every time we hear a little bit more, we learn a little bit more about how she was trained with him or about her speculations about him. And so what other reason do we have other than that he had a role to play somehow, somewhere?
I feel like he had to be involved in her betrayal somehow, because otherwise why wouldn't he have rescued her if she's his most prized assassin? And I imagine he feels some fatherly feelings toward her. Why didn't he rescue her?
Point is pretty on brand, though. Like, if he was just like, let's see if we can get out, that would be pretty on brand for him, given everything else that he's done to her. So,
fair point. Okay, so we cannot talk about this chapter without talking about Sam. Who is Sam? What happened to him? Why do we only get a small snippet? I'm very annoyed about good storytelling. Just tell me everything. in a chronological order with lots of detail. But no. So in reality, we find out that Sam is someone that she was raised with as another fellow assassin, and that there was lots of kissing involved.
Definitely a former lover. Well, actually, I think he was literally her first and only.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the exact line is like, I think he was her first kiss and there had been many kisses. But they were definitely romantically involved. And then I think she even says there was some betrayal and that he died. But we don't really get a lot of more info other than that she is obviously deeply impacted by this. She feels a lot of sorrow surrounding this. And I believe that the timeline that's called out is that it happened 2 weeks before she was captured. And so because she says like she was in a haze, so that all kind of happened in rapid succession. And so I'm wondering if part of why she was captured is because she was in such a vulnerable state after Sam died. But I want to know more about Sam. Also, part of me doesn't, because I feel like I'm going to really like him as a character, but I already know he's gone.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wait, no, he's not. And then I was like, no, yeah, he's dead.
He's dead. Definitely dead. Yeah, for sure. Dead.
Yeah. I kind of feel like whatever happened simultaneously to them. I think they were both betrayed, perhaps on a similar outing. Maybe they were on some kind of assassin mission together. And yeah. Then somebody, you know, shit went down. Sam died through whatever occurrence it was. And then Selena was captured. So obviously that was a huge thing. My point with that, though, is I feel like the loss of Sam was what led her to attempt suicide and try to escape.
Oh, like when she was in Dovier?
Yeah, because she tried to do that pretty soon after she was in there, right?
That's true. Maybe and she so, just kind of, like, her will to survive. There was no one left for her outside of the wall. So it was like, what was the point?
Because we already know she's capable of enduring a lot of pain and suffering via Arabin's right. training. And I think for her to be in that much despair, to just have no will to live anymore, it had to have been over something like a heartbreak, like losing Sam.
Pretty traumatic.
Like, yeah. So I think that was a huge contribution to her mental state in Endovir. It was not just about the conditions of the prison. It was definitely a huge part of the circumstance that led her to be there. And I think it continued to affect her while she was in the prison.
I think it makes sense, because one thing we know about Selena is that she doesn't fail, right? And so Sam dying, I'm sure she takes it deeply personally that whether she was there or not, she should have done something. She could have prevented it. But him being betrayed and ultimately, I'm assuming he was killed. It wasn't an accident, but let's assume it when he was killed. It's her fault, whether it actually was or not. But she feels this responsibility for not protecting him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. So there's a couple other things that I noticed. Again, we see some more interaction between Dorian and Selena. And now we can actually see them having a real conversation that has more depth to it. That's not just like flirtatious banter. And he does say something interesting, though, where he's like, try not to get lost in her strange, lovely eyes. So also, similarly to how we noted Dorian's sapphire blue eyes that are very like different from the rest of his family, he always has taken note of her eyes as well. There's been several references to Selena's eyes too. So I feel like
about that.
This is just kind of another little piece of evidence to say that there is something unique or something different about Selena, perhaps playing into my previous theory about her being a witch. I don't know. But point is that there's something different about her that's notable, that adds to not only her beauty, but also this mystique about like, who was she for? So that was something that I thought was interesting. And then there was a conversation that they had. Selena really wanted to know who had ordered Sven. So obviously there was another champion's death. Sven had tried to escape and he did not make it and he was shot down.
No.
And Selena's very worried about this. And Dorian says, my father commanded all the guards to shoot to kill if any of you tried to escape. I don't think Kael would ever have given that order. So I feel like Selena's question about who made that call was really her trying to decipher whether Kael would actually kill her if it had come down to it. Right? Like if she had been in that position instead, would Kael, given their relationship now, would he ultimately choose to kill her in that situation? Because I think that was really stunning to them, because they were all in shock.
I think she even notes that even Kane is very still and calm and is not his normal boisterous, obnoxious self, because even he knows that all of their lives are at risk by a jumpy guard if they were to make too quick a movement. And so even Kane is taking mm-hmm. that moment very seriously.
Right. That was clarification that she needed to feel comforted. So yeah. That was an interesting conversation. And yeah. I also think that he's trying to empathize too, because I think Dorian realizes that that was a pretty intense moment mm-hmm. for them. So that whole conversation, I think in general, was just showing that Celaena, again, really wants friends and companionship. I think Kaol obviously had become a friend, but there's also still been this boundary between them. So all of it's just very difficult to reconcile between all of them, really, yeah. about how they actually feel about each other and how they're allowed to feel about each other too.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so chapter 21 is pretty straightforward. It's mostly a plot-driven chapter. I don't think there's too much to analyze. It is an exciting chapter to read. They're immediately, Celaena's in peril. We're climbing up a wall. Things are happening. And it's very exciting to see her showcase her skills, you know, because a lot of the challenges, it's just like, oh, it's archery. Like, okay, like she shoots a bow and arrow. But this one requires some real strategizing and some forethought on her part. And a little bit gives insight into her strategy and how she would handle it. She remarks that Kane, everybody takes the easy path, but she takes a little more challenging path, but it will hopefully allow her to get there first. So two things notable happen in this challenge. Ned Clement, also known as Scythe, falls to his death. Good riddance. He was a creepy, torturous murderer. So bye. No big loss there. One less person for Celaena to have to contend with. And yes. Secondly, that Grave attempts to sabotage Nox by pushing him down and then attempting to cut his rope. And Celaena makes a daring rescue attempt. Really, my only question is, what is her motivation for doing this? And I think in this chapter, she sort of thinks to herself, like, what am I doing? I should win. I should focus on mm-hmm. what I'm doing. But she can't help it. And I think similar to the previous challenge with Paylor, when he does a bad job and she worries about him, feels bad. I think she feels that's similar to Nox. Like, if she's going to beat him, she wants to beat him fair and square. And then secondly, kind of what we referenced earlier, that I think she started to feel this bond and at least allyship with Nox. Even just from a purely practical standpoint, it is helpful for her to have an ally in the competition. But I do think she actually likes him a little bit.
I think so too. I think she is starting to view him a little bit as a friend.
Yeah.
Hopefully, maybe. I don't think they know each other well enough to do that. But she does, you know, through her slow interactions of showing kindness towards him and helping, you know, with the knife throwing and giving him pointers, their conversations, we get just the little conversations of them discussing other things that are going on with each other. And I don't think she likes the idea that somebody is going to die and lose their life, because obviously if Nox falls, he's going to die.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and she doesn't like the fact that that's going to happen because somebody cheated. I will say, I just thought she was so smart. She's like, y'all are getting that rope. I'm getting this jar, this tar, so that tar. It can stick to the walls. And I was like, her girl, so smart.
That's our girl. She's going far, baby. Also in chapter 21, important to note that one of the champions did not show up for the test and nobody knew where he was. And it is revealed leading into chapter 22. At the end of chapter 22, it is revealed that he was found dismembered, just like the other assassins that have been killed. By who or what, we don't know.
The serial murders are going on. We got a rampant creature on the rise.
Or a person.
Or a person. Probably a demon, though.
I don't, maybe. I mean, some people might say that.
Could
be.
Some
people might not.
But yeah.
But for this final chapter for today, it jumps right back into the middle of Celaena's attempt to save Nox. Thankfully, it is a success, but the excitement is not over. They're still both in the middle of the test, which they quickly realize. They're like, oh shit, we still have to finish so we don't get eliminated. But she is successful. They do finish the test and they are not eliminated, although she gets 18th place. She's very annoyed. But later in a conversation, Kaol, you know, tries to make light of it. And he's like, well, Nox finished behind you. But that is a small consolation for Celaena. She does not care. She wants to be number one. Mm-hmm. But a little bit of insight into this conversation is that she mentions Arab and Hamel to Kaol, and Kaol acts surprised. And he basically says he had forgotten that Arab had trained her. And she's just kind of like, well, yeah, he did. So
how do you think I got to be where I am?
Exactly. But I did think that was interesting that Arabin is notable even to Kaol. So that tells me that Erebin's name is known, because I did always wonder if, like, the King of Assassins, his identity was kind of a secret, like Elena, like Selena's. But that indicates to me, if Kale knows of him, that he is well known in the law enforcement community. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
To spin off what you just said about Erebin, though, is if he's that notable, then how come he's never been arrested for anything? Like, he's just escaped? He's just never been caught?
Yeah, he's too good. He can't get got, you know?
Can't get got.
Can't get got. Can't get got if you're the best.
Yeah, that's true. But another piece of information about Erebin, though, where I was like, man, this dude was such a dick, was just the fact that he made her pay back.
Oh, yes.
All that coin. I think she said it was like half 500, a million. Like 500,000 gold coin. And I was like, what is this man spending all this money on?
Yeah.
And she was 14. And I was like,
and she says it was gone in 3 hours. And I'm like, were you gambling or something? Like,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, you can't. Yes. I mean, nobody loses money that fast unless you had some debts to pay or something. I don't know.
I mean, unless you just went to the roulette table and was like, put it all on red, you know? I don't know. But I did note that too. I literally have in all caps, what did he spend the money on?
What is he doing? Who asks a kid to pay back all of that money for something they didn't even ask for? He just sent her off all of these things and was like, I'll pay for it. And then it's like, just kidding, psych, pay me back.
Yes. And also, what in the actual fuck did he spend half a million gold coins on to train her to be an assassin?
We'll never know.
I don't know.
Well, they send her off to some places. I mean, she talks about how she goes to the Red Desert. She's in the Bogdano jungle, wherever that is, in the southern continent. So, I mean, she's been traveling around, but it's not like she's going overseas or something. I don't know. I don't know how much it costs to travel whenever this is set. But
probably no airfare, though. Probably no airfare.
No flying.
And then the last notable thing I had for this chapter is that we find out that yet another champion was found dead, dismembered, but the killer or killers, who knows, still remain a mystery. All right. Well, that concludes the analysis portion of our show today. So next we have, what do we have next, Lorraine?
Next this is where we got the fun part. So as promised, we have a quick little demonstration of our champions bracket.
Oh, yay. So we start off with 24 total champions, including Selena. And we know that 4 die in this section. However, only 3 of them are named. The first to die is Bill Chastain, a.k.a. the Eye Eater. He is murdered. The second is Sven, an army soldier. He tried to make a run for it in the training room and was taken out by the Royal Guards. And third is Ned Clement, the other murderer that goes by the nickname Scythe. And he falls off the castle wall during the second challenge and falls to his death. The fourth is at the very end of chapter 22, but it's not revealed who it is. So for our bracket, we will not be able to name who that is just yet. So we'll mark off the 3 that we do know. And we will try to link that in the podcast notes, but if not, it'll be on the video version if you're watching.
So, ta-da! Here is our champions bracket. I put my little star over Lillian, aka Selena, because obviously we need her to win.
She's our star.
She will. She's our star. She's our star champion. She has to win. No other option. We have all of our 24 people on here. Now, there's definitely some characters that we just don't have names for. So some of the extra soldiers have just gone by Soldier 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then we also had some warlords who weren't named. Again, remember that we lost 4, but we only know who 3 of them are. So these are our 3 lost champions. Bill the Eye Eater, we've lost Ned Clement, and we've lost Sven, a soldier. We are now left with 21 champions.
Well, let the games begin, and may the odds be ever in your favor.
Ever in your favor, yes. In Selena's favor. We are almost to the end, folks. Real quick, don't forget, we have to share our favorite moments and quotes. So, Addison, what were your favorite moments and quotes?
Addison totally forgot about that.
It's okay.
Addison forgot. No, I have some. I just forgot that we were doing that part. I was like, oh, we're done. Okay, so in chapter 17, I love all the delicious flirting between Dorian and Selena. There's just like this sort of
I don't know,
tension, this undercurrent of like,
I don't know. It's like mean flirting. I don't know what's wrong with me. Why would I like mean flirting? I don't know why, but I do. I really
do. It's sassy. It's like sassy flirting.
Yes. I like their banter that they go back and forth. And then I really like in chapter 20 when Selena is playing the pianoforte and she's lamenting on how she likes music and it's really important to her. And the quote is, "Oh, she loved to play, loved music, the way music could break and heal and make everything seem possible and heroic." And I just love that quote because I am a music person. I feel music very deeply. And so that really spoke to me. I felt that when she said that.
Wait, that was exactly the part that one of my things too is like she forgot about time as she drifted between pieces, voicing the unspeakable, opening old wounds, playing and playing as the sound forgave and saved her. So again, I agree because it was just so beautiful because she's just so sad and so lonely, but she uses the music as an avenue for her emotion and just
her healing.
And it helps her heal and work through it and keeps her grounded. And yeah, I feel the same way about music. I love music. I'm like a playlist fiend. Like I got playlists for all my moods. I listen to music constantly. So it spoke to me when she talks about music because same.
Yeah.
My other favorite part, this was just a silly thing. I agree that all the flirtatious stuff was really funny too, but I really liked when Princess Nehemia and Selena are sparring. Dorian walks in and is like, "What are you guys doing?" And Nehemia turns to Selena and she says, "You can return to your cushions and dancing and leave us be."
I like that part too.
She's like, "Bye. Like, you don't need to be here. What are you doing here?"
She's so unimpressed by Dorian. I think it was like the previous chapters where she's like, "He grins at me too much."
Yeah. Something like,
she's just like, I think Dorian gives her the ick.
Yeah, I think so too. And she's just so dismissive. She's like, "I know you're a prince, but whatever, bye." So
yeah, those are really good ones. Yeah, there's a lot to love in these set of chapters.
Yes, I agree. Well, we finally made it to the end of our episode. Sorry, everyone, if that was super long.
Actually, we're not sorry. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm not sorry at all. We had a lot of thoughts to share today. So anyways, please stay tuned for next week's episode where we will continue on with the Throne of Glass chapters. Again, we're going to be covering chapters 23 through 30. I am literally so excited because I just really love in this romantic tension between the characters and also got to figure out which one of my theories is confirmed. Okay. And all these deaths. I'm sure there's going to be more deaths and we're going to learn more about that. So there's a lot to keep up with. But yeah, we'll keep reading. And also, as a reminder, of course, don't forget about House of the Dragon. We already have season 1, episode 1 out. And when this episode drops, we will also have season 1 episode 2 available as well. So today technically is when it will be released. So you got lots of content to listen to from us.
Listen, it'll be there when it gets posted, so just keep on the lookout for it.
Stay tuned. Better yet, just subscribe and then you'll automatically be notified. Wow, it's so great. There's no bias on our part whatsoever, so
nope.
Anyways, all right, everybody. Thank you guys all so much for joining us for another episode of the Booked on Fantasy podcast. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts. So if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a review or share it with all your friends who love fantasy fiction. You can also keep up with us on a daily basis by following us on social media. We're pretty proud of the memes we've been posting. And you can find the links to all of our social media accounts in the episode description below. And that is all that we have for you today. So stay nerdy, everybody, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye. Chapter 19. In this chapter, we get a new perspective. Lady Caltaine Rompier. Rompier? Rompier? Rompier?
I'm not sure. I can't help you on that one.
She shoots a bow and arrow. But this one requires some real strategizing. So
strategize.
Chapter 22. Selena's daring attempt to save Noxus is a success, not successful. Okay.
Not success.
Fuck me. Okay. I'm feeling spicy, okay? I'm feeling spicy. It's going to be a spicy episode, everybody. Okay.
Explicit for a reason. Today is that day.
Seriously, not for kids, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so we started with 24 champions. We started champions. Oh man, we gotta get off. We're like delirious.
I know.